Welcome to the Foxworthy Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Fox. I'm here with my co-host, Taylor Gaines, also writes for GainesvilleScene.com.
Sometimes.
Sometimes has a column for GainesvilleScene.com, a TV column. We're here to talk about something that I kind of...
Are you really depressed or really happy right now?
I don't know. You know, we're here to talk about a show that we both really liked last year. I kind of previewed that we were going to talk about it. We've been teasing it for a few months. I think we knew the premiere date was July 13th, and we've been pretty much mentioning it on the regular for several episodes. But the second season of Mr. Robot has finally premiered, with a two-episode premiere. I guess it was two-ish hours, but they counted them as separate episodes, is my understanding.
Yeah, like 1:34 running time, I think.
But anyway, we're here to talk...
Did you say the title already?
Mr. Robot. Did I say it?
I don't know.
I think I did. Maybe not.
Who cares?
It doesn't matter.
Mr. Robot.
You know what? Mr. Robot, we just learned before starting.
So Mr. Robot started off the morning with, like, several Emmy Award nominations.
Emmy Award nominations, right.
Which, if you're not familiar, is the Oscars for TV, basically.
Right. Some big ones, though, like drama series.
Yeah, drama series.
Leading actor in a drama.
Leading
series,
actor.
Rami Malek.
Did Slater get one? Christian Slater?
Possibly.
Supporting
I'm
actor,
not
I think.
Sure every single one.
So it started off with some great news, and then later it rolled in that the season two premiere had the lowest ratings the show has ever had. So,
what do you make of that? Well, let's just say this. We kind of have mentioned this in the past few weeks when we were talking about kind of what's going to be the buzzy show of the summer. Last year, we did a whole podcast last year on all the terrific stuff that we had going on in the summer. We had Netflix shows. We had the third final season of Hannibal. We had Unreal, which was a new show. We had Mr. Robot. There was lots of stuff happening. And Mr. Robot kind of dominated the conversation as, like, what is this buzzy new show? Like, I can't believe this is good. I can't believe it's on USA. And there was a lot of buildup going into this second season. They even announced, like, an after show, like an after talk show called Hacking Robot. And I think they were anticipating some pretty decent numbers.
I mean, they let the creator, Sam Esmail, write, direct, and edit all of the episodes.
All, like, the episodes.
I don't think you would just let a guy do that if you didn't, like, really trust, like, put all your chips on this show, basically. So I think that USA is and was in on it for sure.
Well, it put them on the map. I mean, you have fun, you know, whatever shows that people like, I guess things like Burn Notice, things like Suits,
well,
that are kind of under the USA brand, but this was like something they'd never aired on their channel before.
Well, here's the thing. You're talking about why didn't anyone watch this last night, is what you're asking.
Well, that's what we're talking about, because it's...
Right.
I'm like, fascinated to learn that it's the lowest ratings the show's ever had.
I honestly think that the answer is simple, as much as it is, like, you know, not one that we would really understand. Because, like, think of the people you follow on Twitter. Like,
right.
I follow probably 150 people on Twitter, and probably, like, 20 to 30 of them are, like, TV reporters and TV critics.
Right, reviewers,
like,
critics.
And probably, like,
essayists.
20 to 30 more are, like, entertainment-related in some way.
Right.
So, like, we're kind of in a bubble, probably, in that sense that, like, we read these 20 to 30 people who are always, like, oh, Mr. Robot is dope, so excited for season
right.
two. And they're posting these reviews on their websites. But then, like, that's not really representative of full population, like,
yeah,
like,
and that's a totally fair assessment. I'm just very surprised.
The other thing is,
like,
not,
you said, like, you have these Emmy nominations, like, to start off the morning, and then they're just like, oh, by the way, nobody really watched your season two premiere, or I'm guessing the after show that was a live after show. They literally set it up. It was aired live in New York City.
I don't know. It's
with the creator and leading actors.
We also live in an age where there's a lot of TV shows and people watch a lot of different things, and there's also, like, a show like this will probably be fine because it has, like, the fan base it has is very passionate.
Right.
And that's almost all that matters in some cases. Like, when a show doesn't have, or when a channel doesn't have a show like that, that's all it takes for a show to stay alive, because A Halt and Catch Fire got renewed despite having amazingly low ratings.
Yeah, an AMC drama that I think we both really came around to in its second season, which is coming back. But
yeah.
The Americans is another example, which also, ironically enough, got some Emmy nominations finally after four seasons this year.
It seems like the Emmy nominating crew started following the same people on Twitter that I do.
Right.
Because this year was a lot of stuff that people I follow have been raving about for a long time.
And are kind of, in a lot of ways, off the beaten path, I would say.
Yeah, Master of None.
Yeah, stuff we've really liked. Like
we said Mr. Robot,
Master
Unreal
of None.
Had a couple.
Yeah.
And, you know, Downton Abbey and House of Cards keep getting nominated for drama series, which is obscene. But yeah, it was interesting morning for that.
Well,
go ahead.
I mean, do you want to dive in and talk about, like, why the show so freaking great?
Let's just talk about it, because we could talk about what people not watching it, but I don't really care.
Well, yeah, but there, I mean, we'll get into this now as we talk about, like, the specifics of the show. We are going to talk spoilers of season one and the premiere. We're just going to just kind of openly discuss everything that's going on. So if you want to watch it, we do highly recommend it. We both fully endorse it. So pause it now, go watch the whole thing and come back if you don't want to know. Because this is a show that has a lot of narrative drive, a lot of plot twists, a lot of major things happen that are meant to be surprises and are best enjoyed if you don't know they're coming.
And I'll tell you one thing, this is where we'll start. If you haven't watched the first and second season, first season's 10 hours, and there's been two episodes so far, season two, which is an hour and a half. And 10 hours is more like 42 minutes most of the time, but it'll feel like five.
Oh,
we
talk a lot about length and things being too long or feeling too long, and this is a show that definitely, like last night, there were maybe only two or three commercial breaks the whole time over the first two episodes. I was riveted.
Let me say, we're going to get season one spoilery real quick here. I was reading a preview or some kind of comparison to The Real World on The Ringer this morning, and the author of the piece said, effectively, I don't have the line in front of me, but it said, the twist to find out that Rami Malek / Elliot actually was Mr. Robot the whole time was such an amazing twist and one of the best twists in TV history and blah, blah, blah. And I read the sentence a few times to make sure that I was getting its meaning correctly. And then I thought back, and I'm pretty sure we all knew
from the beginning
that it was that he was a dual, like, split personality, right? I remember it being more like, oh, finally.
Now we're gonna, like,
yeah,
tell you.
Finally.
Right.
Not anything like, what?
Well, and they compounded the twist. They compounded the twists with the character of Darlene.
That was the real twist.
Becoming, right.
Because
that was
everyone
sort of
was expecting the other one.
Right.
I don't know. I just had
anyway.
That thought for some reason.
No, that's something really interesting. I don't know if I read that piece. I mean, what is it that we want to say? Like, this show, we talked last week.
Well, let me spin off that and say that knowing that Christian Slater / Mr. Robot is part of Elliot's imagination, we'll say.
Right.
Since the world we're presented, it's hard to really even say what it is.
Well, and he's representing his dead father, which was, I guess, another element to the twist that maybe we didn't see coming. Was that Mr. Robot was sort of a figment of his imagination, but it was a manifestation of his father. It looked like his father.
But, man, watching Christian Slater as this version of the character in these first two episodes was just thrilling.
Yeah, it evolved, like, to another, they took it to another place. As they talked about on the after show, Hacking Robot, which I only watched, like, a portion of, like, the relationship became incredibly antagonistic.
Did you see this joke on Twitter? I'm totally stealing this. But someone asked Andy Greenwald, who has now hosted two after shows this year, they asked him if he was going to host an after show for The Americans called Hacking Mail Robot.
Amazing. That's a really good joke. TV insider stuff right
well,
here.
Well, it's more if you watch The Americans.
If
you knew what Hacking Robot was. But yeah, go ahead. You were saying something about Christian Slater and Mr. Robot.
No, it just, you're right, though. Like, those scenes were electrifying. Like, those scenes in the bedroom, like, he shoots Elliot in the head, and you're like, oh my god, and, like, you know that it's not real because he's imagining it, but it's still, like, pretty shocking and, like, kind of graphic, and
you know a good gauge for if a show is good? when someone gets shot with a gun, your reaction to it tells you a lot about the show. Because a lot of shows overuse violence and death, and it just feels muted, or it feels like, oh, this again. But even knowing that Christian Slater was part of his imagination,
right?
The moment after he shot him in the face was... I just stopped and was sitting in shock for a second. I mean, you know he's not dead because he's the lead actor.
Right.
But it was just jarring. It was,
yeah,
it was awesome.
It jolts you.
It's just a cool moment.
But yeah, that's the thing about the show is, I mean, we're just going to go in, like, we were talking before we started recording, like, the show just kind of fires on all cylinders. Its visual style is, like, pretty unique, especially, like, the way TV is made now, where you have directors like Steven Soderbergh working on things, like, trying to make the medium, take the medium in a new visual direction, which not every show does, obviously, but you have shows like Hannibal that did that really well. You have stuff like, we've mentioned, like, The Americans doesn't really have that. So there's still, you know, shows that don't really factor that into when they're being created. There's not that much craft in the cinematography and, like, the way that shots are composed. But this show has that.
Like, I'm also led to believe other shows couldn't pull that off. What you're talking about.
Right.
Because this is the first TV show I've ever seen that is told in first person. Have you ever seen a TV show that's told in first person and filmed in first person? Effectively, the world we see is Elliot's world.
For the most part, yeah.
For the most part. I mean, it's spread out a little bit more here in the beginning of season two than I remember it doing last season, as far as...
Where you see
following
scenarios,
other characters.
Scenarios that he's not a part of. Right. Right.
But... For the most part, and frankly, you just can't live in a first-person environment exclusively for an entire TV show, but that aspect of it really lends itself to the distinctive filming techniques
yeah.
that they use.
And obviously...
Basically, every character is way off-center in every shot, except sometimes when they aren't in the center, and then you feel really weird, which
right.
is such a weird thing.
Yeah. Well, and that was something that was kind of talked about. The voiceover, which is still obviously at play a lot here in the first few episodes we've had of the second season, was something that people were just, like, really surprised by in the first season, was because, like, voiceover is a very, like, overused thing in TV and in movies, and for whatever reason, just the way that it's written and the way it's delivered, it doesn't feel cliched, it doesn't feel like, oh boy, here we go again, like, you're always, like, listening intently. You don't want to miss a word that's being said. Like,
it just
grabs you.
I think it's because... Is it Rami or Rami? I can't
Rami Malek,
still
yeah.
don't know. Rami?
I think so, yeah.
Part of it is because Rami Malek is so good at doing this off-kilter, weirdo character.
Right.
Because when he's doing the voiceover, he's also talking to the audience.
Right.
And knowing how weird he is, it's disconcerting. It makes you uncomfortable... Do you remember the moment in the first season where he shakes the camera and knocks it to the ground? It's such an awesome way to present the show. I don't know that it is something that can really be replicated though.
Right.
It's a lot of things that had to happen together for it to work the way that it does.
Yeah.
As far as actor, writer, filmmaker, like cinematographer.
Yeah.
Like just a lot of different elements that happen to create this really fascinating and frankly just captivating experience that this show does now.
Yeah, it's riveting, it looks beautiful, there's a lot of dark humor, the performances are great. We mentioned Rami Malek obviously as the lead, as Elliot, and then you have Christian Slater playing Mr. Robot. And that was something that we were just talking about too before we started recording, was like, even though that twist came like towards the end of the first season, we knew there was going to be another season, and I'm fascinated by how well it still works watching those two play off each other, knowing the twist.
It's,
you know, because you feel like it would sort of suck the life out of those scenes with those two characters if you're like, oh, he's just like made up. But it is more interesting, it's more riveting. Like, you just sort of, yeah, I don't
think
know.
It's because, part of it's because Elliot's trying to make him go away by not acknowledging him.
Right.
Most of the first two episodes. And the other part of it, I think, is what we were talking about a minute ago, which is that we kind of knew the whole time.
Right.
That twist was coming.
Yeah,
so now that
it felt obvious from the beginning.
Right, now that it has, we're not waiting for hammer to drop.
Right.
Is that the phrase?
The shooter
drop. Do you
drop?
Wait for
another
hammers?
Shooter
do
drop?
You wait for hammers? You don't wait
don't
for
know.
Hammers to drop? I wait for hammers to drop all the time. I'm just like, man, one hammer drop. Where's the other one? Sorry.
Oh, man.
But now that we're not waiting for that.
Right. It's like the show can really do what it wants to do.
Right, which is, everybody talks about the Fight Club inspiration in the first season, but Fight Club, I'm about to spoil Fight Club if you haven't seen Fight Club. And although, even mentioning Fight Club in reference to the show basically spoils the whole...
Right.
Fight Club never went past the point where you know...
Right, it happens at the end.
Right, it's
and
the end of the movie.
Is essentially
I do
ending.
Know, I happen to see on the internet say, this is completely random, the author of Fight Club, which was either a book or a graphic novel, I skimmed
the
article.
The book that the movie is based off is a novel. But he wrote a sequel
that is a graphic novel. That's
correct.
What I was going to say. I saw that there is a Fight Club too.
Yes.
And I don't know how long it's been out, but he probably is very sad that he doesn't have any attention for it.
Probably.
Regardless. What's interesting is now we get to see what would happen after the credits of Fight Club, basically. Like,
there was a
how
clever...
do you deal with knowing that you have an alter ego, invisible friend that you can't control?
Right. Yeah. And it's, you know, we were talking about how there's, like, I mentioned earlier that there's, like, a lot of narrative drive. I don't even know that I care so much about the story. It's just kind of, like, watching, you know, like, you want to know what happens next, but it's almost, like, not important. And we were just kind of talking earlier, before we started recording, saying, like, we can't even really guess what's coming. Like, does it even, not that it doesn't matter, but it's, like, do we even want to think about it or just let it unfold? Like, it's kind of just, you just kind of watch it and just let it wash over you. You know?
That's an interesting point, because it makes me think, well, for one, it makes me think you're right, because when you say that, I try to remember what's happening in the show, and I realize I don't really
Well, there's a lot
care.
Happening,
I mean,
but it's like, some of it
I don't really
holds
care about the...
Things.
It's a simple storytelling thing, really. Like, I don't care about whether a hacker group can defeat this invisible group of rich people. I just want to know if Darlene can do it.
Right.
I want to know if Elliot can do whatever he's trying to do, which is, I guess, make Mr. Robot go away.
Yeah.
If, damn it, I forgot her name again.
Angela?
If Angela can do whatever she's trying to do. It's, we were talking about this in relation to Preacher as well, which is, if you care about the characters, you'll go wherever the story goes.
Right.
And I think that's where I'm at with it right now, where the story is good and it's interesting and weirdly relevant at this particular moment in time, but that's not why I'm there, right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, and, you know, we did an episode where we talked about Better Call Saul, which was the Breaking Bad spinoff, and we kind of talked about, like, how much we care about, like, the minutiae of, like, what's happening, and, like, or do we just want to, like, be in that world and kind of follow the people, and, like, you know, I'm not saying the story in this case doesn't matter, I'm just saying, like, We were almost saying, like, we don't really want to guess what's coming next. Like, we've talked multiple times about how this show is kind of a high wire act and, like, how it could just crash and burn at any minute.
I feel weirdly safe with it, though.
I know. That's the thing, though. Like, every single episode of that first season was so surprising that it was, like, the success of it was, I couldn't believe after we got through that whole first season that there wasn't, like, a bad episode.
The show just feels like it's been mapped out. And not in a bad way.
Right.
It feels like every point is necessary and leading to something. And, I mean, I don't know how long... Again, I don't know if you can keep that up forever, because if a show goes on for 5 or 6 seasons, you can't really keep that up. Although, I mean, shows like The Americans kind of have. But something like Game of Thrones, it starts to veer around, and you're sort of thinking, oh, we're getting distracted from
kind of spinning its wheels a little bit until you have,
This has only aired, you know, 12 episodes, but it still feels like just building, and then boom, we're gonna hit you with this, and now you know this, and then we're gonna keep building, and I just don't know how long it can do that, but I'm gonna enjoy it.
But I agree with you. I do feel kind of weirdly safe, and we talked. Like, the show is just incredibly confident. Like, it doesn't... And there are things, like we mentioned, the show has, like, a few kind of minor flaws here and there. But just, like, the deliberate style of it, and the performances, and the music choices, and everything about it, in terms of its visual style, and its filmmaking and the way that it's all put together kind of papers over a lot of those, like, minor problems.
And
like,
I was telling
things
you,
that kind of feel either, like, ridiculous or, oh, that line is kind of cheesy, like, in retrospect, or that kind of stuff just kind of falls away and you don't really care. Like, you kind of are willing to forgive it, any of its flaws.
And I was telling you the other reason I feel safe is because I know for a fact that the creator had the whole story written already.
Yeah.
Because,
well, and that's the other comforting
thing,
is USA has given him so much creative control.
Right, because the story goes that he had written a movie, right? And it was the script.
Apparently too long.
They told him it had to get shorter to be a movie.
And someone suggested, like, kind of on a whim, like, oh, you should think about, like, making it into a TV series.
And he did.
And he did.
And it's really good. And that's
really good.
I don't even know why we're saying that, because anyone who's still listening obviously watches it.
There was two more points I wanted to make.
Go for it.
There was something really interesting that you were saying before we started recording, where you talked about the way that the themes and the relevance and the message, even though I don't really like to use that term, but, like, sort of the point of the show
lesson, yeah.
The point that they're trying to make, and the overarching themes, how those kind of present themselves, how you kind of sit up and pay attention to those more than you would in another show.
Well, I was
and
also...
And why do you think that is? Like, I really liked what you were saying about that.
Well, the thing I wanted to clarify was the first season, I didn't love all of that stuff because it felt preachy and conspiratorial at
right.
times, like conspiracy theories. But weirdly, it just... With all the news and political stuff that has happened over the last year, that message feels... I don't want to say truer, but more plausible,
right?
Right. Does that make sense? It really is more interesting, and this sort of ties back to what we were talking about with being invested in the characters and where the story is going, because when a show is good and that stuff is taken for granted in the right way, taken for granted that you're just saying, oh, it's good. You can take the time to think about the thematic subtext
right.
stuff that's going on. Because the point you were referencing, Daredevil...
Well, you think that it's just because it's more confident and so much more confident and so much more assured.
Right.
That the rest of it is there, that you can focus on what it's actually trying to do, rather than be like, this doesn't really work. And
there's
this
also this aspect
really
of a show, when it's good, you're willing to listen to what it has to say.
Yeah.
Think of it like you're talking to a person, and they step on a broom or something, and it goes up and whacks them in the face, and then they try to tell you, like, some super deep thought that they had.
Right.
I'm being really reductive, but someone does that versus someone has an
right.
interesting conversation with you, and then they start talking about something.
Right,
it doesn't
go down as easy.
Right, when you trust a show as a show, you'll listen to what it has to say, where the reason we were talking about Daredevil in reference to that is Daredevil's not a good enough show to raise questions of morality and vigilante justice and
right.
what's where the line is. And
it's kind of
it's
sole
just
purpose
there
is
to entertain
them, and they try to shoehorn that stuff in a way that doesn't feel natural and it doesn't feel earned.
Earned is a good way to put
yeah.
it. That's what people mean, I think, when they say earned, is in that context at least,
right.
is that you can't just show up with your TV show or your movie and instantly drop some kind of, you know, what's a...
So do
life
we,
is meaningless.
Do
I
we
don't
think,
know. It, you know what I
do
mean?
Do we think, like, the show of the summer is basically going to be a three-way tie between Preacher, The Night Of, and Mr. Robot? Like, what do you think? What else is on the radar, do you think? Or do you think that the conversation is going to be dominated by those three? Because I don't know
I think
of anyone else really talking about anything.
The conversation that we follow will be about those three, for sure.
I believe so, too.
And honestly, I don't think Preacher is going to be a huge part of that conversation, because for one reason or another, I don't see a lot of people talking about Preacher. I think it's good, and I think it's fascinating.
It maybe just hasn't caught on.
But I wonder if people
Preacher's a little more work.
I wonder if people have kind of hit their wall with there's just so much stuff, and there's, like, stuff that they want to watch from years ago. Because I know a lot of people who just, like, take the summer to just binge-watch old stuff.
No,
like, old stuff like Sopranos, The Wire.
That's what summer,
classic
yeah.
stuff. So, like, I wonder if people are going back to, like, Netflix back catalogs and being like, I'm going to catch up on, I'm going to watch all of Friday Night Lights because I've never seen it. I mean, that's what I've considered doing because there's, like, two or three things I really, really care about this summer that I feel like are going to be worth keeping up with that are to be part of the conversation, but also because it's going to be some of the best stuff of the year.
And you know what else? It's summer.
It's summer.
People,
it's just you have all this time.
People might be just doing something else other than watching TV on a
right.
Wednesday night.
Exactly.
Anything
else you want to say in terms of Mr. Robot? Or I mean, the show is freaking awesome. Like, if you like TV and you can get...
If you like filmmaking...
Right. And I wonder, we were talking kind of about why people don't watch it. I wonder, like, it does kind of feel at times like a very niche show. Like, it's just very, like, it's very smart, it is very visually, like, I don't know that it's necessarily, like, has a mainstream appeal or is that accessible to a wide audience, but people who care about filmmaking and, like, really good performances and, like, interested in, like, one man's kind of vision, I mean, it's all kind of coming down to, like, Sam Esmail wrote and directed the whole second season, I kind of wonder, you know,
yeah, so, I mean, we heard,
if
we
it's
saw...
just maybe too specific and it just doesn't have, like, that wide appeal that... is going to be, like, a massive hit. Ratings,
yeah,
ratings-wise.
Honestly, though, there's not a lot. It takes a really, really special and, dare I say it, unique
yeah.
mix of things to be a popular show in this day and age. I mean,
yeah.
it's just... it.
The
it,
show just has so much craft. I hate to see it go to waste.
You have
know?
To be a fantasy epic... that has been building for years.
Right.
Has legendary, like, fight scenes and plot twists. Or you have to be a show about the trial of the century. The trial, like,
yeah.
biggest trial in American history, maybe.
Shout out to OJ.
It takes a lot. And summer is
just
not going to
happen. Yeah, you just
got to
capture people's attention.
But,
it's like, it's not as zeitgeisty as other things.
Let me
and
say
it
this.
Seems like people have soured a little bit on Unreal this season, which you're a little behind. But a
couple weeks behind.
What were you gonna say?
Let me say this, Mr. Robot. Last thing we talked about in our first ever episode, and you know when we recorded that episode, 1 year and 1 day ago.
Wow.
How about that? And we probably have probably like multiplied our. Listenership by like 10.
What do you think we're at now? How many people do you think actually listen?
I can tell. I'll figure it out.
Is it like more than 10?
We have a new track.
Is it
service.
less than 50? More
I'm
than
50? I'm pretty sure it's less than 50. I think it varies. Our Hamilton episode, since I started tracking, most listeners for Hamilton.
Okay. Apparently that's the way to do it. Well,
so,
we're gonna have Lin-Manuel Miranda as our guest next week on the podcast, telling us now that he's got free time what
nothing
television shows he's gonna watch. I think that's gonna wrap it up for us here this week at the Foxworthy Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Mr. Robot airs Wednesday nights on USA, the USA Network at 10 p.m. I don't know what we're gonna talk about next. I'm sure we're gonna find something. You know, there's a new Netflix show that is kind of getting a little bit of buzz.
Something called
Stranger Things, yeah, starring Winona Ryder, which is kind of like. An 80s kind of nostalgia throwback to, like, the Steven Spielberg kind of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, E.T. kind of era. So, it sounds interesting. People seem to be kind of digging it. I think it drops on Friday, so maybe we'll check that out and kind of get back with you guys on that. Hit us up on Twitter. We're at The Foxworthy Pod. If you go to @FoxworthyPod, you can find us on our website, thefoxworthypodcast.com. We are also available on The Establishing Shot. If you go to theestablishingshot.us, you can find us there. You can find Taylor on Twitter, @GainsTaylor. You can find me @FoxBJ_88. And we'll see you guys next week. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be right back.
Foxworthy Podcast.